Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Growth and more growth. That would seem to accurately describe 2025's impact on Charlotte. We experienced surging economic growth throughout the year with more major deals and more job creation. Our population continued to grow. We increased from 117 people moving here every day to 157 newcomers each day. And for the first time in a while, the number of companies moving into office space grew faster than that space has been emptying. But it wasn't all sunshine and roses. There were growing pains, particularly for small businesses facing unprecedented rental rate increases and declining revenue, some of which can be attributed to tariffs. Here to help us review the impact of 2025 on the Queen City's economic fortunes and to look into what 2026 may hold are three journalists who cover these trends regularly. Eli Portillo is executive editor for WFAE News. Ashley Fay is managing editor at the Charlotte Ledger. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor at the Charlotte Business Journal. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being
morning.
Here.
Morning.
Hi, Mike.
So, good morning. Welcome back, by the way, Ashley. It's been a long time.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Let's start with the good news. At the end of last year, the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance held a luncheon at which Tom Barkin, who is the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, shared his insights and predictions on the economy for 2025. And he said that as the presidential election began to fade into the rearview mirror and inflation rates went down, employers might trust the positive demand and start hiring again. But he also said employers could keep their recession playbooks out and cut more costs to maintain profit margins, which could lead to layoffs. But he called the economy at that time in good shape. So Ashley, of those predictions, which was the more accurate with regard to this region?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a mixed bag overall. I mean, obviously, Charlotte has seen a lot of growth, a lot of positive news. We've seen a lot of job relocations, a lot of businesses that have already been established here certainly saw hiring. But there were certainly headwinds. You know, I think tariffs and some of the monetary policy from the federal government has certainly been a major headwind for a lot of employers. And that's probably made them pull back a little bit on hiring, maybe less than they would have done in a year where we didn't have so much uncertainty around tariffs and monetary policy. But then things like the tax bill that passed this summer has been heralded as a boost for the economy and for businesses in general. We did see a little bit of an uptick in unemployment, both nationally and in North Carolina and in the Charlotte region, but nothing that would suggest that there's anything necessarily huge to worry about. No big, dark, looming clouds necessarily on the horizon. But, you know, I think there's still that sort of cautious optimism, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, kind of to your point earlier.
So inflation was a key factor in the last presidential election in 2024. We haven't seen many prices go down, with the exception of gasoline. In some cases, those prices have gone up. How much, Eric, of an impact has that had on Charlotte and businesses in Charlotte and consumers in Charlotte?
Well, I think Charlotte is mostly in that regard following what you're seeing nationally, which is, look, we all go to the grocery store and we all pay bills and we all see that prices, as you said, are not going down. Other than gasoline, almost everything else is going up. Inflation has not abated nearly to the degree that the administration promised it would on day one. And yet, somehow, businesses and consumers have, for the most part, kept spending, kept going. As Ashley said, maybe they're not hiring to quite the same degree, but overall, the economy has chugged along pretty steadily. And another factor that you mentioned at the beginning of the show also has to be factored in when we talk about Charlotte, which is the overwhelming continuous growth, 150 people a day. UNC Charlotte professor said it was actually 200 a day, so we can debate that. But whatever the number is, there are a lot of people coming here, and that's helping spur the economy as well.
Eli, in July, North Carolina reclaimed the number one spot on CNBC's top states for business rankings. We also secured a record number of job commitments in this past year with promises to create more than 33,000 jobs statewide. Of course, those promises quite often don't materialize. But how did Charlotte compare to the rest of the state? Do we know?
Charlotte has done very well. I believe, according to the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, which is, of course, promoting us, we've been ranked the number fourth metro for growth overall in the U.S. And that, of course, compares favorably to other cities in North Carolina. If you look at the companies that are coming here, one thing that I thought was interesting is more of a diverse mix of companies. There are some of the stalwarts like banking and finance companies that have long powered Charlotte's economy, but also a lot of manufacturing companies, auto-related companies. Of course, the Scout Motors headquarters coming to Charlotte, Toyota opening their giant $14 billion battery plant in Randolph County. So there's a lot of diversity compared to, I think, some previous years in terms of the investments that are materializing and the companies that are coming here.
Ashley, the UNC Charlotte economic forecast, which is thought to be the big predictor of the state's economy on a quarterly basis, is projecting sustained growth in the fourth quarter of this year and into 2026 for the state. But it does warn of some concerning headwinds from federal economic policies, including our seeming inability to control fiscal spending. In other words, we keep adding to the deficit by trillions of dollars. Charlotte has often fared better than the rest of the country during some trying economic times in the past. Could that be the case this time too? And are local leaders keeping a watchful eye on this?
Yeah, Mike, I think everyone is keeping a watchful eye. I think we're still feeling sort of that cautiousness that we were feeling even entering 2025 a year ago. And I think that's only going to continue. We're still closely watching to see what the Federal Reserve does with interest rates. We did see a couple of rate cuts this year. And I think the industry, you know, business economy in general is hoping for maybe one more rate cut before the end of the year. That might unlock some of the capital that's kind of been sitting on the sidelines and some investment that maybe has paused this year. But yeah, Mike, I think next year it's going to be really important to watch the labor market, especially, you know, industries that have been affected by some of the immigration policy we've seen from the federal administration. We're certainly hearing the alarm being sounded on things like construction, which we know Charlotte growing as fast as it is. We're seeing so much construction and obviously a labor pool that's been affected by immigration policy. So, yes, I think there's reasons to be optimistic. Charlotte's more diverse economy, to Eli's point, might help buoy us in a time of uncertainty. But there's certainly things to keep an eye on as well.
Eric.
Yeah, to Ashley's point, it was interesting last week, the luncheon that you mentioned from 2024 repeated itself, the Charlotte Alliance Economic Forecast, and Brian Moynihan, the CEO from Bank of America, was generally upbeat, but he did cite immigration as probably the number one uncertainty and disruptor of business, particularly for small businesses. And he mentioned the fact that it's interesting, or problematic is probably a better word, that so many businesses can't find the employees they need, and that the immigration uncertainty is a big part of that.
Eli.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the 150 folks a day moving to the region, the 15 county Charlotte region. That is, of course, a very optimistic number. But I think it's interesting when you look at how many of those people are immigrants. The analysis said that almost half, I think it was about half, about even 50-50 of that growth is being powered by people who are international movers. People are coming from other countries to here. And obviously an immigration clampdown, I think, is likely to restrict that number and maybe dent that 150 people a day number that everybody loves to point to.
Yeah, and people have to remember that immigrants, whether they are here through proper channels or whether they came here because they overstayed their visa or crossed the border illegally are adding to the economy. And when you remove them from the economy, spending declines because they are spending in order to live here. The Charlotte Regional Business Alliance released figures. We're in the fourth quarter, but they released figures for the third quarter because we're always several months behind knowing what happened in the previous quarter. But in the third quarter of last year, our unemployment rate stood at 3.32%. This year, it's 4.1%, just slightly higher. Ashley, how healthy are those employment figures in comparison to the rest of the state?
Yeah, so, I mean, looking kind of statewide and even nationally, Charlotte's faring a little bit better. We've seen nationally the unemployment rate's hovering closer to 4.5, so it's not really far off from what we're seeing in Charlotte. But, you know, to everyone's point earlier, Charlotte's an economy that overall does outperform a lot of its peers and a lot of even sometimes bigger cities just because of all the growth that's happening here. The sectors that are based here are maybe faring better than others overall, but I would say, you know, keep an eye on the unemployment rate heading into 2026. I'm curious to see if that continues to change and sort of what this cooling of the labor market might mean overall for the economy and even how workers think about whether they want to change jobs or kind of their mobility in the market. I think that's also an interesting trend to watch.
Maybe I'm just myopic because I think of Charlotte as a banking town primarily, and maybe a lot of lawyers as well because of the banking interests that are here. But evidently, manufacturing is big here because manufacturing led the quarter here in Charlotte in terms of total projects landed. Eric, what did we land in the manufacturing sector?
Oh, God, now you're testing me. I'm trying to remember. I guess the biggest
Scout?
One. Scout? Now, what's that?
No, go ahead. No, never mind.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you're asking about the third quarter, and the first thing that came to my mind, of course, was Scout, which is the fourth quarter, and they're actually making the cars in Columbia, so I don't know if you can count that or not. I'm going to have to deflect to Ashley or Eli because I'm not coming up with, like, the big menu. I mean, I know it's growing, but I can't give you good examples off the top of my head.
Yeah. We're talking about business and the fate of business in 2025 and what the future may hold here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Can anybody answer that question? Ashley, do you know what led?
One earlier this year, AVL Manufacturing. I don't really know too much about what they do, but I think they're opening a plant here, 300 jobs or so. But I think, Mike, to your point more generally, you have to look at this kind of regionally because we are seeing so much manufacturing, distribution, some of those kind of uses going to areas outside of Mecklenburg County, but that are still part of the kind of broader Charlotte region.
And the other thing, Mike, real quick, is logistics. I don't know if you mentioned that we've had a lot of growth in logistics kind of across the board. That's another one. You know, we had the Maersk announcement recently with their headquarters, but even before that, there have been a lot of logistics companies that have either expanded or come to the area recently. And we do have some history there with the, you know, the confluence of the interstates and the trucking companies going back a number of years, but that's another healthy sector.
Manufacturing may be leading in terms of our growth and projects landed, but evidently, according to the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, the rate of office projects landed this year was significantly higher than last year. Is that, Eli, to say that after several post-pandemic years of anemic office rentals, because everybody worked from home and high office vacancies, that is finally beginning to turn around?
Yes, it seems likely that we're seeing a resurgence of the office. I know just anecdotally, more companies are requiring people to come in 5 days a week. I think Truist was the latest in Charlotte to announce that, or with a significant Charlotte presence. And I think it's much more of a question whether we kind of stall at 3 days a week or whether five becomes a norm. I think hybrid is kind of... on the way out.
I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We have to take a break. We're here with Eli Portillo, senior editor at WFAE News, Ashley Fahey from the Charlotte Ledger, and Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the year behind us and the year ahead of us in terms of economics and business news in Charlotte. Eli Portillo is here. He's senior editor with WFAE News. Ashley Fay is managing editor of the Charlotte Ledger. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. We seem to be seeing people coming back to work. And one of the leading economic indicators at the moment in Charlotte seems to be that office space is beginning to fill up. That was a thing that was happening as of late in 2025. There was actually a lot of fretting, and we did several shows about this, over what to do with all this unused office space in places like Uptown. And they were talking about repurposing these buildings and turning them into condominiums where possible. Sometimes some people even spoke about tearing some of these office towers down. Now that we see a resurgence in demand for office space, is all that in the rearview mirror?
I would actually say no, Mike, because what you see in the office market right now is a bifurcation. All these companies are picking the new buildings, the ones that have been built in the last 5 years, the ones under construction. You're seeing a little bit of an exodus out of the older Uptown towers into the new buildings in Southend, more in Van Allen. They're going to the Queensbridge Collective site in Southend. 110 East started the year, I don't know, with any tenants announced, and now they're basically full, and that's also in Southend. And there's still a lot of buildings in Uptown that are sitting, you know, 50% or less, you know, occupied. So I think the question still stands, Mike, as far as what do we do with this old office space that's sitting vacant, that's lost a lot of value, a lot of tax revenue for the city and the county. We are seeing one conversion underway now. Asana Partners and MRP Realty are converting the old Duke Energy headquarters into housing and retail. We're hearing about another one, 400 South Tryon, potentially the two Wells Fargo buildings. So I think there's more to come on that front, but there's still a big question of what to do with the 25% of the office space in Charlotte that's sitting vacant.
Eli.
And it also varies a lot by submarket. I should point out as a disclaimer, we are all doing this show from home right now. So just keep that in mind as we talk about this. But there are office markets, like Ashley was saying, that are hot right now. And then there are others that are struggling, that have much higher vacancy rates. University City, I think, you know, where our studios are based, walking around some of those offices there, there's been some positive movement, but a lot of those older buildings are still largely empty. So I think it varies a lot by region. And much like the housing market, it's tough to just say the office market overall, because there's so much differentiation between different areas and different products.
Yeah. Eric, did you want to chime in?
I was just going to say real quickly, and if people are not following the office market closely, pretty much anything pre-2000, you're in trouble. And pretty much anything after that, you know, you've got a pretty good shot. And as Ashley said, it's the new buildings that are snapping up all of these either existing businesses or new businesses coming in. But for those
is that because they're shiny and new, or is it because they were built with modern technology in mind, and you don't have to upfit the building to accommodate that?
Well, I think the second one is the one you put in the press release, and the first one is the reason.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, referring to anecdata here, I have friends and acquaintances who work at some of these newer towers, and I've gotten the chance to tour them, and walking around them, it's like, wow, okay, I actually would like to come here. It beats my bedroom. Older buildings that don't beat my bedroom, good luck.
2025 saw new business investment in the area accounting for about, I think, 71% of economic growth here, Eric. Office jobs led the way in the increase in employment, followed distantly by distribution and manufacturing jobs. But AI is looming large, and there are those who are predicting that within 5 years, AI is going to take all, if not most, of the white-collar jobs that are being done primarily in these new office spaces. Is this increase in office job growth temporary? Should these people, and by extension our economy, and the people who own these office towers be concerned?
Let's just shut it down now. I think we're done. Everything is AI. I mean, it feels like it has been for the past 2 years. Again, going back to some of those CEOs who were speaking last week about the year ahead in the economy, it was Brian Moynihan from Bank of America, Gene Woods from Atrium Health, and the head of Compass Group, the big food service company, Palmer Brown. And they spend a lot of time talking about how AI is changing their business, how important it is. And yet each one of them said that they don't really think they'll have people doing different things. They'll be doing different jobs. Yes, AI will do a lot of work that is now done by humans, but they don't seem to think that there's going to be a drastic reduction in the number of people. And I think that's what you hear kind of in a lot of areas, that AI can make things faster, better, hopefully, but that you're still going to need people to do various things with that AI. And that's typically what we see with all kinds of technology. It comes in, it's disruptive, it does take over some tasks, but you still need people to run companies.
So we have a pretty healthy, and traditionally have had a fairly healthy economy here in Charlotte. I'm curious, Eli, why? People keep moving here, 157 to 200 people per day. They're coming here for a reason. We have jobs. We have evidently a thriving economy. Why? What's the goose that's laying the golden egg here?
Well, I think there's two important ways to look at this. One is what we mean when we say people moving here. Now, that 157 number a day, around 40% of those people are moving to Charlotte. So that's around, 60 people a day moving to Charlotte. Around 90 of those people are moving to the other counties around here. And I think that really reframes this discussion when you look at it that way. It's not 157 people a day moving to Charlotte. It's 60 people moving to Charlotte and 90 people moving to the other counties around this region. That points to affordability. A lot of those counties, the homes are substantially cheaper. That is a major driver. And also the growing regional distribution of jobs. The other thing, I had to circle back to what Eric said really quickly with AI. We're not seeing, mass jobs being nuked yet. But if you look at the major employers like Bank of America, for example, their headcount right now globally is about exactly the same as it was 10 years ago. Their revenue has grown a lot, but they're not hiring more people. So I think AI will have a bigger and bigger effect, even if jobs aren't nuked en masse, just with fewer jobs being created in the future. And that actually is something I think we need to keep a really close eye on in this region, given our concentration of insurance, financial, legal, and managerial jobs.
So we do have a lot of companies moving here, whether they're headquarters or distribution points, et cetera. And most, if not all, states, including ours, offer economic incentives to company to locate their businesses in an area. Well, we do that here based on the number of jobs that these companies promise to create. Ashley, is that why the increasing number of companies wishing to locate places like data centers here and around the state are not being met with as many incentives because they don't employ anybody once they're up and running?
Yeah, there's been a big debate nationally about incentivizing data centers. Some states have offered incentives to these users. Others are saying, no, we don't need to incentivize it. To your point, Mike, they're not big job creators. I think with data centers, though, real quick, you are just seeing a lot of people just coming here. A lot of big tech companies want to put data centers, whether it's in the Charlotte market or other parts of the state, just because of the AI. To the AI point earlier, AI is driving a lot of this demand for data centers. But we know these projects are highly controversial. They take a lot of power and water, things of that nature. But what the projects that I think you're seeing most of the incentives kind of attached to are more of the big employment type of things, the things like Scout Motors, which is going to bring, projected 1,200 jobs, things that are, maybe easier to tout in a press release than a data center per se. But I to your point, I do think data centers is going to be something we need to keep watching in 2026.
So Mecklenburg, we keep mentioning Scout Motors, and they are locating their headquarters here. It's coming here, and they're manufacturing their cars, however, in South Carolina. Mecklenburg County approved $12.8 million in incentives for Scout Motors to come here. I think the state overall has pledged $70 million to move the corporate headquarters here. That'll be paid out over 10 years. How many jobs, Eric, will this bring to town? How much are they scheduled to pay? How much tax revenue are we likely to see from these people coming here and these jobs that they'll be taking?
So it's 1,200 jobs. I think the pay was somewhere around $160,000, $170,000 a year, which is roughly double what the Mecklenburg County average is. Remember, the way incentives work is that the money has to go into the system, so to speak. The company has to make the hires, they have to pay the taxes, and then they receive their incentive back as a portion of that. The other thing is that it can be clawed back, and it has had to be clawed back with Chiquita and some others. So incentives are always going to be somewhat controversial. And at the same time, it feels like they're never going away because every state uses the same line, which is, well, I wouldn't do it except he does it. And so that's just kind of the way it goes.
Plus, we beat out Tysons Corner, Virginia, which is a D.C. suburb, and we beat out Charleston, South Carolina for this headquarters. Was that because we offered more money in incentives, or was there some other reason for their deciding on Charlotte? Ashley?
It's not as easy. Go ahead, Ashley.
I was just going to say, I think incentives are just one piece of the conversation. You know, I don't think a company makes a decision solely based on incentives. I think labor, especially right now, is the biggest piece. Can I actually hire 1,200 people who can do the jobs I need at this operation? But sure, incentives, if you're comparing, you know, splitting hairs and comparing two metros that have good population and labor, you know, maybe incentives then helps sway the deal. But go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, you know, particularly with Charlotte, and I guess a lot of cities, but one of the things that really helps sell Charlotte is the airport. I know we mentioned this a lot, but the airport and the direct service for a city this size. So what that gives you as a recruiter is you can say, I have all of these flights that go directly to the places you need to go, but my cost of living is lower and your commute time comparatively is shorter. Now, we are, I'm sure, going to talk about how the region is grappling with those problems because they are becoming more difficult. But compared to Washington, compared to Dallas and some other bigger markets, Charlotte still has some advantages there.
I wasn't planning to talk about this, but you were talking about the airport. So let's talk about it for briefly, because a couple of years ago, there was a lot of discussion about this intermodal transportation facility at the airport that would facilitate cargo coming in from hubs or harbors on the coast by train to Charlotte, then be distributed by trucking and airplanes to other places in the country. Has that panned out?
You know, I think it's done okay. I don't think that it's been maybe as gangbusters as it was pitched, but that's a very superficial reading. But let me clarify here. While freight is important and cargo, what I'm talking about, though, are moving people from, you know, here to, for example, with Scout, they're owned by Volkswagen. Well, you can have direct flight. You do have direct flights to Germany, obviously, for the bankers going to New York. That's more what I'm talking about when I say the airport.
Okay, so we are the 14th largest city. We ranked 9th in the nation for in-migration. We have for 4 years. 2 years ago, 117 people moved here a day. Now it's 157 by some counts. That's 57,300 people to the region every year. The number of apartment buildings, Eli, is growing by leaps and bounds to accommodate that in many cases. Housing prices have continued to stay high. Rents are also high, though some have started to decline, I guess, because of the plethora of opportunity people have who want an apartment. And we have a scarcity of workforce or available affordable housing in our area have for years. How is this changing the character of the region, Eli? And for how long is this growth sustainable?
Well, that is a big question, and I'm going to dodge it by answering a smaller question. I think that the housing market is reshaping the region by making Charlotte and especially the close-in neighborhoods increasingly more and more of a bastion of wealth. I think you're seeing the wedge spreading and more people who are in search of more affordable, what we might think of as middle-class housing, moving out farther out to the suburbs. You know, the average house price in Mecklenburg hit $607,000 last month, and that is compared to $511,000 throughout the whole region. Those are both, you know, more than double what they were a decade ago. I do think it's going to be tough for the housing market to sustain these price gains if more inventory starts coming online. That is really the rub here. It's not demand, it's supply. So even though mortgage rates have stayed above 6%, we have not seen that housing market demand slacken. The supply still remains pretty constrained by historic standards.
And the area is becoming increasingly urban. Even inner city neighborhoods are beginning to change in terms of the buildings allowed by the UDO that are changing the look and feel of neighborhoods. And perhaps that might change some people's opinions about whether or not they should move here. We have to keep a careful eye on that. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Eric?
Yeah, I just want to mention one statistic. I remember covering the annual housing summit that UNC Charlotte does. And there was one statistic that just leapt out at me and it stuck in my brain. I wrote it down again last night, which is that 75% of Charlotte residents cannot afford a median priced home. And yeah. So that just in a snapshot tells you how severe the housing problems are. And despite all of the money and effort put in, which does make a difference, but all of that effort to build affordable housing, it's so hard to catch up. You're really kind of, you know, using a teaspoon to empty the ocean kind of thing.
Well, I was going to ask about that. We've put a lot of money into trying to maintain and increase the supply of affordable housing. We have very few tools in the toolkit to do that because North Carolina's state government won't allow us to do certain things. Is it even possible? Are we spitting into the wind? Is it a losing battle?
Well, I think it's a battle that's going to require, and you hear experts say this, it's going to require policy changes. That means something is going to have to give in local and state government to subsidize and speed up housing. It's probably a combination of not just money, but regulations. And those are big changes. And I think the thing that is likely to push it, if we do make some big changes, some systemic changes, is business. You know, the business leaders can go up to Raleigh and have sway that most other citizens do not. And the transit tax that we recently passed here would be an example of that. So I think it's going to take that kind of effort and sustained push to really make that happen.
I have 45 seconds. Eli and Ashley want to talk. Eli, go.
Yeah, I just think that it's worth keeping in mind how small the money that we spend on affordable housing is in comparison to the market. You know, you have $100 million housing trust fund. The value of all the homes that were sold in the Charlotte region, if you just multiply the number of homes by the average value, is somewhere around $720 million last month. So it's a drop in the bucket.
We have to stop. We'll come back with more in a moment with the outlook of 2026 and some of the sectors that will be impacted by those predictions when Charlotte Talks continues. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Eli Portillo, senior editor for WFAE News. Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal, and Ashley Faye is managing editor of the Charlotte Ledger. And we're talking about the year behind us economically in Charlotte and the year ahead. People move here in part because our taxes are low. But this summer, our sales tax is scheduled to rise, at least in Mecklenburg County, by 1% to help pay for the transit plan that voters said yes to. That plan will add more buses, more trains, more local road projects, and other transportation projects as well. Do leaders expect, Eric, this plan to have a noticeable positive impact on how we get around as we continue to grow?
Well, they have sworn up and down to us for years that it would, so I have to believe they're sincere in those statements. And given all of the miles and miles of audio and video and related campaigns, they better hope it does, because we all have plenty of clip and save evidence. One of the things, Mike, about this, with the $25 billion that's going to be spent in the next 30 years, going back to our discussion of recruiting, that's a big thing that is now being pitched over and over to companies, whether they're thinking about expanding or moving here, is, hey, unlike city X, Y, or Z, Charlotte is putting in all of these billions of dollars so that it will become even easier for you to get your workers to and from the office. So there is a lot, God, this is a horrible pun, riding on this.
But this is not, Eli, the plan that we originally wanted to build out. It's a compromise, and a big one at that, made because we couldn't get the legislature on board if we didn't do it their way. And they live in Raleigh, so they know best. Do leaders anticipate that implementation of this plan, Eli, will result in more development and an increase in the tax base along the train corridors like we experienced with the Blue Line? Or do they really view this as a transportation plan that will alleviate congestion?
Well, publicly, they talk about it more as a transportation plan that will alleviate congestion. And I think if you talk about some of the road improvements, remember 40% of the revenue has to go towards that, and the bus improvements, that's 20% bus and microtransit, maybe those will. The rail, I think, is anticipated to be a real land development boom east and west, like we saw with the Blue Line north and south. One thing that is going to be tough for this transit plan is it really has to serve all these different goals. You know, people expect it to bring down congestion. People also have heard it pitched as a tool to improve equity in our city and make it easier for low-income people to get to jobs and get around without a car. And people are certainly in the business community anticipating a real estate boom like the one we've already seen. So it's going to be a challenge over the coming decades. And remember, this is going to take at least two decades to build out to see if the plan can serve all those goals.
Let's look back on a couple of things that happened in 2025 and how they may impact Charlotte going forward. Ashley, in June, Charlotte's new medical district opened, the Pearl District, and it houses the Wake Forest University School of Medicine and a growing number of medical technology companies, and the first four-year medical school in our recent history. I think we had one a long, long, long time ago. But the first class started this summer. What has yet to materialize there, evidently, is the affordable housing that was promised as part of this project. Why? What's the holdup?
Yeah, so Atrium, when they were going through their kind of public process for this medical college way back in 2021, I think, they sort of said to city leaders, hey, we know affordable housing is a priority for you. You know, we'll put 5% of housing on the Pearl site for affordable housing, and we'll donate a separate 14-acre site on North Tryon Street to the city's housing authority in Livian for more affordable housing. But the city's contract with Atrium does not actually legally require the hospital to honor all of those commitments. And there's been, you know, recently, my colleague Michelle Crouch at the Ledger has been reporting on this very closely. And basically, Atrium has said it's meeting its contractual obligations, but a lot of folks are saying we need to see affordable housing here. The Pearl was built on land that was part of Brooklyn, which, of course, as we all know, a lot of, you know, historically Black communities were displaced when during urban renewal back in the 60s and 70s. So it's really something that a lot of community members want to see for the site. We still need to see what's going to go on with the North Tryon site, but there's been a lot of protesters, a lot of folks who are saying it's a priority for us to see affordable housing. Yeah. Where is it and when will it be built?
And there may not be a contractual obligation, as you pointed out, but this is a joint project of Atrium Health and Gene Woods, who is the CEO of Atrium's parent company, Advocate Health, pitched this project to city council years ago while emphasizing that, quote, it's going to be important to continue to focus and be committed to affordable housing, both on the site and also away from the site. And they promised to set aside 5% of the apartments slated for phase one for low-income residents. Eric, has any of that housing yet been built, whether you're low income or standard income.
No. Remember, this is a phase project that will be built over years. We should mention that Atrium still says that its commitments for affordable housing will be met. Mike, the other thing that I think this kind of bleeds into is a number of the jobs at the Pearl, I think there's supposed to be 5,500 jobs eventually. A number of those jobs will not require college degrees. And this is something when we're talking about recruiting, we're talking about jobs, we're talking about the economy. One of the areas where we as a region have struggled is we're very good at bringing in particularly white collar professionals, young professionals now, those 150 people, whatever the number is. We have too often not trained and educated a healthy portion of people who are natives of Charlotte and gotten them into stable jobs. And that's why you hear workforce development in almost every incentives announcement. You know, what are you going to do as a company to train local people, to hire local people? That's something that we could replay on this show every year. That is always a challenge. And that's always an area where Charlotte could get better.
This gets us back to tax incentives, Eli. When Atrium went to the city and to the county in 2021, they asked for $75 million in tax incentives. Did they receive that money?
Yes, I believe they did. And that is in the form largely of tax increment grants, which are like those jobs incentives paid back over time.
Were those incentives contingent in any way on building affordable housing? And if so, if they don't come through, will they have to forego some of those incentives?
I'm going to punt this to Ms. Fay because I have not reported on this story and the Ledger has.
Right. Yeah, so the impression I'm getting, I haven't reviewed the contract, but the impression I got is that a lot of it was for road improvements kind of around the Pearl site. And like I said, a lot of the conversation around the affordable housing component was kind of vocal in nature. And the city's contract does not legally require the affordable housing component. So it's one of those, I think it's more of a question of Atrium kind of publicly talked about this and said, we want to do this. This is a priority. And city council voted on it with that sort of almost vocal promise. But it's not in the actual contract with Atrium to build that housing. So I think that's where sort of the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Eric.
I was just going to say, not to distract any from that very important aspect of this project. At the same time, the medical school and the Pearl are two of the most important things to happen economically in this region in a very, very long time because of all of the opportunity to bring in research money, to bring in life sciences companies. I was speaking with the head of the Economic Development Partnership in North Carolina last week, and he was saying for the first time, Charlotte really has an argument now. That's traditionally been Raleigh and the Triangle, but now Charlotte between the Pearl, the medical school, and what Eli Lilly is doing up in Concord with their manufacturing plant, now you have another diversification area for the economy.
So in September, it was announced that Queen's University of Charlotte would merge with Elon University in 2026, I think in June of this coming year. At the time of the announcement, there were questions about whether Queen's would maintain its name, the names, and in fact, their athletic teams in general, and the names of those teams, and exactly how this joint venture would work and who it would really benefit. We're now about 7 months away from that beginning to take place, solidifying this merger. Do we know anything new about those questions yet? Eli.
We don't know a whole lot. We don't know a whole lot. The president of Elon, Connie Book, said recently that she thinks it will take until, I think, 2028 before all of this is done. When I say all of this, the combination of the schools. On the athletics piece in particular, Mike, that has to go through the NCAA. And so there's a lot of bureaucratic red tape right. that has to be navigated there. Outside experts seem to think that those teams will hang on to their independence. But there is just so much to be sorted out, not least, of course, combining about 9,000 students between two campuses.
Speaking of sports, the Hornets are here. The Panthers are starting to win. Charlotte FC had a pretty excellent season overall. The Savannah Bananas brought in $38.8 million to the city over the course of two nights. The PGA Championship was played here again. Thousands flocked uptown for the FIFA Club World Cup. And next year, Bank of America Stadium will host the U.S. men's national team in a preparation match for the 2026 World Cup. Eric, how would you assess the state of sports and its participation in our economy here in Charlotte?
Sports continues to be a really big part of our tourism economy. And when you hear Charlotte Center City Partners, which is kind of the booster and economic development group in Uptown, they talk a lot about how, because of all the shifts in work habits and some of the commercial real estate problems we were talking about earlier, how important it is to have arts, culture, sports, and concerts. And sports continue to bring a lot of people into hotels and restaurants, and particularly into Uptown. And Mike, you didn't mention it, but the MLS All-Star Game, Major League Soccer All-Star Game, will be here next year. So Charlotte is getting to a point now where it's starting to snowball. These events are not as big of a surprise when they're awarded as they used to be.
And it's easy to quantify what that means. All these teams and all these sports and all these games mean to the hotel, motel industry and the restaurant business and parking lots and things like that. But then there's that intangible benefit that we always talk about when we talk about luring sports teams and facilities here. And that is what we get on television around the country with streaming services and network television. This has been going on for a long time. Has anyone anywhere ever actually quantified the value of that?
Not really. There are people who take a stab at it here and there, and it really depends on what side of this you're on. If you don't like sports, or you don't like the fact that sports stadiums often get subsidies, you're going to say it doesn't matter. And if you do, you're going to say it's the greatest thing ever. I hate to give you this answer, but it's probably somewhere in the middle. There is some benefit, but it's really hard to quantify exactly. Yeah. When was the time that the banker sat up and said, "Oh my God, Charlotte's on Monday Night Football. I must be there." That probably didn't happen.
Right. Okay, Ashley, we've talked a lot about big business and its impact, 25's impact on it and its impact on 2025. What about small business? How did they fare in Charlotte?
Yeah, Mike, when we talk about things like tariffs, which just feels like such an intangible thing when you think about it, but it really is a tangible thing for something like a small business, right? We know like there's been a lot of international grocers who source things from abroad that have seen the impact of tariffs. We know a lot of small businesses have had to change suppliers because of tariffs. And it's not strictly because of tariffs, more general concerns around inflation, where the consumer is today in 2025. Are they reining in spending, which hasn't seemed to be the case? All these things weigh on a small business much more acutely than a larger business that could absorb some of this a little more easily. So kind of just speaking broadly here, it just seems like the small business climate is overall doing okay, but there's certainly concerns that are hitting them more acutely, maybe especially around tariffs and how they have to think about how they price items, how they source materials, whether or not they can grow and hire. So all these things have certainly influenced the small business market in Charlotte here.
And the restaurant bar business suffered greatly during the pandemic. It was slow to recover, particularly in Uptown, because of all the empty office space, people not going to lunch, people not staying for dinner, etc. Can we assume that with the increased office rental that we're experiencing suddenly, that business is going to turn around or has turned around, Ashley?
I think it really just depends. So even though, yes, there may be more day-to-day traffic, we're seeing people back in the office more, which means more lunchtime traffic, more maybe after-work drink traffic. You can't deny that to be in the best place in town, which whether it's South End or Noda or some of these other places, the rental rates are also going up. The cost to actually do business is going up. Costs across the board are going up. So is it enough to offset maybe the increase in traffic? I think it's tough to say. But we are seeing a lot of more out-of-town kind of out-of-market groups coming in and wanting to put a foothold, whether it's food and beverage or other types of businesses here, which is also kind of competing with small businesses here in Charlotte. I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag, I would say, Mike.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. We're going to have a new Fed chair, I think in 2026, sometime mid-2026, because Jerome Powell's term expires in May. Tariffs may or may not continue next year, depending upon a Supreme Court decision about their legality. And the trend of inflation is partly tied to their future existence. Jobs numbers and other economic indicators from the federal government that businesses have come to depend on may or may not be as reliable as they have been in the past, given machinations by the Trump administration. But business leaders, particularly bankers, of which we have a plenty, they kind of know. They have an inside view of the economy. Eric, what are they saying about what the coming year may hold for Charlotte?
They seem pretty optimistic. Again, the outlook, I think, the other day was projected growth in the 2% range, something like that. They seem, fairly comfortable with the uncertainty, if such a thing can be possible. They think that there are a lot of other factors that can help override that. Continued spending, obviously, being one of them, and population growth being another one. So for the moment, they're pretty bullish.
And I have 30 seconds, Ashley. We have no budget in the state of North Carolina. That affects salaries for teachers and state employees and the future of Medicaid subsidies. If we don't pass a budget soon, could that hurt us in some way economically?
I think, yes, that's completely fair game, Mike. How it will, it's hard to say, but I definitely think that's a factor and it's something more and more people are talking about.
And you get the last word. Ashley Fay, managing editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Eli Portillo, senior editor here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.